guys. Welcome back. Episode 9 of the Strength Academy podcast. Grayson here with Mundo.
What's up, y'all?
All right. So sorry about the week off there. After finishing up AO3, we just did not have the energy to sit down and do much of anything.
Yeah, or the time. It was just pretty much nonstop from the time we got there to the time we left.
Are you starting to feel a little more normal after the weekend, or are you still a little groggy waking up in the morning?
I feel pretty good overall. I think I've finally settled back into kind of the routine. This week has been pretty light. Took most of it off. I only worked out 2 days just to try to stay active, and I think I'm ready to get back into it.
Yeah. The easy week, you know, it kind of... It's good for the recovery. Like, you need to take a little bit of time off, especially if you push pretty hard for a competition, and especially you having to do 2 competitions in a month, and really pushing the weights at both of them. It's good to take a little bit of time to relax and get that desire to train built back up, because I think we both know that's one of the things that tends to go, is you're, you know, you just don't want to go into the gym and pick that weight up again. And having kind of a mandatory light or mostly off week, it usually kind of makes you like, okay, I want to get back into lifting some weights now.
Yeah, that's how I feel right now too. I'm definitely ready to get started on this new program. So I'm excited. I'm looking forward to it. I'm ready to go Monday morning. It's on.
Yep, we're building back up. Our gym, our next main competition really isn't until the American Open Series 2, for the most part, for our general athletes here. So getting into some deep off-season training where we can, you know, really work on dialing technique in, and we do not have to worry about peaking for a competition very soon. I think it'll be really good to kind of get back in shape and just spend some time developing other athletic qualities than just trying to push for those max snatches and clean and jerks like we did in the end of that last block leading up to AO. But I think overall I'd say that we performed really well. We brought 14 athletes and coached 15.
Right.
Because we helped out a friend from out of town. And yeah, so 13 sessions over 4 days. And yeah, everybody did really well, man. I was very happy to see, especially our lifters that haven't lifted at a meet of that size before, getting that experience of keeping calm and collected in the back and having to lift under some spotlights with you know, a crowd of people watching. It was really cool to see people getting outside of their comfort zone. And yeah, we had people, you know, hit some PRs in their totals. We had a lot of 4 and 5 for 6 performances, and Robin and Tyler both placed in that top 15, so they were both right at 15th place, which is just absolutely awesome. And let me see, where was D overall? There's too many pages of 64s. let's see.
She placed 9th.
9th, yeah, yeah, that was it. So we had, that was really good. And, you know, that was exactly what we were hoping to get out of that meet. So we've got our guys that are getting ready for American Open Finals, but the rest of the gym, we're into some off-season training, and it's gonna be a good time. I will say that was definitely the most I've had to work at one of those meets before. You know, coaching 26 hours of competition over 4 days, it definitely, it's hard, man. It's, I always forget how hard travel and odd sleep schedules and not having the food that you're used to wears you down for a week. Cause I was tired all week, man. It was rough.
Yeah, no, I agree. And then not everybody showed up at the same time, so it was kind of hard to coordinate with the people that hadn't got there yet, the people that were already there, and then being in the sessions ourselves coaching. Yeah, that made it kind of difficult logistically. And then as far as like food goes, Las Vegas, I mean, there wasn't a whole lot in the vicinity. You would have to go you know, a little bit away from the casino to get anything besides a buffet or some of those food court foods. And then, yeah, being there for, yeah, like 26 hours was hard. A couple people asked me, oh, did you have a nice vacation in Vegas? And it was not a vacation. There was a couple days where Grayson and I both got up at like 6 in the morning, and then we were up till at least 10 or 11 at night. And that's just coaching sessions. And the couple of days where it was a little bit less, we were still trying to just catch up on sleep or, you know, find something entertaining to do, but still, you know, not overextend ourselves too much.
But I will say that I thought the meet overall was really well run. At least all of the sessions that we were involved with were on time. There was ample room in the warm-up area. The competition venue, for having five platforms, wasn't that distracting. They were all in a line. It was spacious, plenty of seats for spectators. It was a really, really well-run meet, and the volunteers deserve a ton of gratitude from everybody that participated, because they were working way harder than we were coaching.
Yeah, they were definitely doing really well.
So that was it was an awesome experience, though. I think it was good to see, like I said, those first meets, but it was also a really good kind of check-in for our lifters that are going to be headed out to the American Open Finals. Just kind of checking in to see where they're at 12 weeks out from that competition. It was exactly where we needed to be, looking at where we can improve and kind of guide that training in toward the next chunk.
Yeah, so for the couple of people that had already competed at those AO series level meets, you know, they just solidified their experiences and kind of gets just some more totals under their belts. But the people that this was their first time, that it was kind of exciting for them to have that experience, and for them to see some of the other elite national level lifters there as well. So they were sharing platforms with, you know, the likes of Matty Rogers and Hunter Ilham and who else? John Downey.
Consuelo got to have a long conversation with Sarah Robles, and yeah, you know, they were chatting between snatch and clean and jerk. It was really cool to see everybody kind of get to, you know, interact or at least be around these people that we all look up to in the standings. And it was a really valuable experience. I think that when you get to see it live for the first time, and you see sometimes like video speed or, you know, video angle, you don't really get a good feel for it, but watching somebody, you know, watching Sarah clean and jerk 162 at the end of that meet was outstanding. Like, that was one of the best live performances I've seen. And then not to mention, you know, CJ Cummings and Maddie and Jenny Arthur just, you know, throwing weights around and out totaling me. It was awesome.
I think a large part of the world team members were actually there for at AO3, so they solidified spots on the world team. They had to put up good numbers, obviously, to do that, so we got to see some pretty good performances and some really great lifting from, you know, lifters from all over the country. I was really happy with the way things were run too. I spent maybe the first night just kind of wandering around the venue and checking out the training hall and stuff like that, and it was just very well run, especially compared to the one in Miami. One was terrible.
It was leaps and bounds ahead.
But yeah, so great. I was just blown away by the smoothness of the meet. Everything went on time. There wasn't a whole lot of, you know, lag in between sessions. It was just efficiently run. One session got out, the next session started, things were rolling on time. So I was really happy with how that went, and I should probably do that survey that Phil Andrews sent out.
Oh yeah, I gotta get on that.
But yeah, no, it was a good meet, and I'm looking forward to, you know, bringing a lot more people to AO2 next year, and I know that's going to be the main focus for the team, as far as like the next big thing. But there's a few meets that are going to be in between now and then, and we'll get some more chances to up their totals, get some more experience under their belt, and just continue to prep for one of those big meets again.
Yeah, I think it's gonna be really nice having it here in Albuquerque because we're gonna not have to travel. I know that we drove out, which, the 8-hour drive back and forth to Vegas definitely didn't do anything good for my mobility practice. But it's gonna be really nice not having to travel so much, considering we do have coming up in the next year, University Nationals, Nationals, and American Open Finals that we have to plan for making those trips for. So it'll be nice to have one here in town where we don't have to, drop a bunch of money on plane tickets or spend 16 hours in a car to get back and
Yeah,
forth.
and then hotel costs too. Like if I don't know if the one in Albuquerque will be quite as big as the one in Las Vegas, but if they started lifting on Thursday, that's a 4-day stay, 3-day stay at a hotel. So
Yeah.
that's something that we don't have to worry about, which is cool. The third one, AO3 next year, is going to be at Daytona Beach though in Florida.
Yeah, I have a feeling that we're probably going to have a few people that are going to want to go out to that one.
Maybe we'll see. We might discourage it. I don't know.
Yeah, we'll see if we can swing it. One of us at least will go if we have a handful of people going.
It'll be hurricane season, so maybe
Oh,
that'll be a deterrent.
wonderful.
But no, so looking back, for our lifters, a lot of them did go 4 for 6 or better, and there was a couple that went 6 for 6. Was there anything that we could have done better to prepare them, or did we give them as much as they needed to have, and then it was up to them the rest of the way?
I think that for the most part, the prep for this meet went really well. I think that the few hiccups that we did have were just related to getting to know how certain athletes perform in competition. So knowing like, okay, where do we need to open? What's comfortable? How do you handle this kind of meet? But I feel like overall, everybody's leg strength and technique kind of came through really well. We didn't have a lot of, grievous technical errors showing up on the platform. Everything for the most part looked pretty smooth. I think that, just for us, the practicing, just getting better at selecting what we think people should open up with, and kind of getting a better feel. Well, just getting to know the athletes better. Where, what can we expect from being in training to what carries over into competition? Because I'm sure that, you've seen there's kind of two groups. There's, people that consistently lift 5 more kilos than they did in their training at their competitions, and there's people that have a harder time hitting those numbers. And just for us, getting a better feel and doing more of these meets is kind of getting to know people and what do they need? How are they kind of generally set up going into a competition?
Yeah, I think that when people get to those meets where there's a lot of spectators, where there's the spotlights on them, it changes the way they approach their lifting. 'Cause when they're in the gym, they're having fun. Everybody that they want, to hang out with is there, and they know the equipment, they know the space. They can put on their own music. And when that environment isn't there, maybe they get a little more nervous, or they're not quite as comfortable, or it kind of just puts them off a little bit. So I think that opening lower for some people and getting them lifts and actually making lifts is probably more important than hitting this, huge total. None of our people are probably going to be going for American records or trying to hit, super totals,
Yeah.
for podium placement. Not that they're not capable of it. They're just not capable of it at the time being. So I think it's better to get them an experience where they can make lifts and hit a good total, without sacrificing too much of their ego, I guess you could say. Because I know some people, like, they don't want to open with what we want them to open with because they feel they can lift more. But if when you take all those things into account, like travel, food, the environment, if you've been watching your teammates, you're sitting there watching lifting, getting stiff, sitting in a chair, like all that stuff comes into play. And then we do peak our athletes to perform their best at meets, but sometimes their psychological state may not be what they need it to be. And so all those things come into play. And I think it's just you have to trust us to help pick your openers and just go with it. Don't try to, off-road and go off into the weeds and figure out like, oh, I'm gonna do what I want to do. So, and then you don't make lifts. So.
Yeah, and I think that that's something that on our end that I want us to kind of practice is in all of these little intermediate local meets before we get there. I want to try to make our goal for this year having people miss as few weights as possible. So really setting them up for 6 for 6 performances and working on improving the total. Because at the end of the day, the total is what actually matters. So if you do, if it's maybe you can get tie that PR snatch, but you can definitely do 2 kilos under, you're gonna have a better total going just up under those weights and doing 6 lifts really well than really forcing yourself to push out. Because if you try to do that 5 kilo PR and you could have done 2 kilos less, you just lost 2 kilos off the total, your opportunity to build that number. So I think that one thing I want to do is in this next year of training is really work on making people understand that it's the total. So it's what did you put together and getting the consistency in performance. Because I think the more times you go 5 or 6 for 6 in competitions, the more you expect that to become the reality. So you have that expectation of if I attempt a weight, I'm going to make it. And it's, a difficult balance between actually pushing and still making a lot of those lifts and having that consistency. Because I'm kind of torn sometimes because I think that you need to be attempting heavy weights to kind of get the feel for them, but also you don't want to practice missing. So if you're missing weights every week, then you're getting practice in at missing, and that's, kind of defeats some of the purpose. Because if you've missed some of those heavier weights in training, when you approach it on the platform, you're like, oh, well, I've got a 50-50 chance at this. Instead of, oh, I haven't missed a lift in 6 weeks, I'm going to go out and hit that.
Yeah, exactly. So the thing is that's why I'm not a fan of just continuing to go for PR attempt after PR attempt. If you're going for a PR and you're truly trying to hit a one rep max, three chances is all you get. That's all you get on the platforms, three chances. So I hate when people ask for more than one chance at a PR, like, oh, it was so close. I was like, well, on the platform it would have been so close too. And that's it. You don't get another shot. So that idea of practicing and getting consistent at making lifts and having as few misses as possible, I'm totally on board with that idea. Because if you can create consistency in technique and then push the weights just a little bit higher and higher every time, and then they get more consistent at those weights, when they do end up going on the platform, they're going to be confident they can make those. It's like, oh, I haven't missed this weight in 6 weeks. I will make this. Instead of, ooh, I don't know, I tried this 5 times and then I got it on the last try and it looked like garbage. Maybe I should, just go for it and see what happens. It's like, that's not the mentality that I want people going in with. And I think that approach of, well, if we're gonna have our lifters make as few misses as possible, we can't give them chances on lifts that they're trying to attempt multiple times and they're not consistent making.
Yeah, and I think that that's probably going to be the approach that we take, and it's something that we've tried to kind of get through, but I think we should be a little bit more, stay on top of that, and just, from our perspective, like something that we can do better to make sure that we have more people making more lifts at these meets is just really emphasizing that, if it, I would rather you, if you're having a rough day, take a few kilos off the bar and do better work. Because the, you know, if you're in a fight with your girlfriend and you didn't sleep very well and, you know, you have some stress at work and then the program calls for 80% for three singles, you might not have that in you today, but it, you do have it in you to do three really good singles. So I would rather, if you know that it's going to be a little bit off, take it a little lighter because you're still getting practice in with the reps, but, you know, take how well you've prepared for that training and what extraneous circumstances are going on in your life into account when you train. Be honest with yourself. Like, if you come in and you know that you've eaten once a day for 3 days, that's probably not the day to push it. That's the day to try to get back on your routine. And I think that it's really important to kind of take an honest inventory of what you're doing outside the gym, because the gym is just an hour and a half to 2 hours that you get in, you know, maybe 3, maybe 5 days a week. But that leaves a lot of time throughout the day that you can be doing things to improve your weightlifting that are not related to actually doing weightlifting.
Right.
We've talked about some of those as far as recovery goes or meditation or getting enough sleep. But it's important to just not make those, like, you know, things like, oh, I'm going to try to get this in. But if you're disappointed with your performance in the gym or at a competition, you need to weigh, you know, in that self-evaluation period where you're kind of setting your goals for the next block or the next competition, you want to take an honest inventory of, it's like, well, did I take really good care of myself throughout this whole thing? Where did I start to feel really beat up? And was that I was too beat up to do the training, or is it that I didn't have the other things in line well enough to recover adequately for the training? And I think that that, you know, approach tends to work really well. Because if you're kind of skating by, eating a lot of bad food or drinking too much, or yeah, Mundo's showing off his caramel apple slushy. But, you know, so taking an honest assessment of, like, okay, well, not just how did the training go up to the meet, but how did your preparation for training go during the meet? And I think that to progress to those higher levels and to move from middle of the pack to top 30 to top 20 to top 10 over the few years, the better dialed in you have your routines and your mobility and your recovery, that's where you kind of want to make sure that you're assessing. Because, you know, the program will work if you have things that are off, but it won't work its best if you have things that are off.
Yeah, and so, like, when we're talking about making lifts and totals and things like that, we're talking about people that aren't trying to qualify for anything either. If they're on the verge of qualifying, we'll probably allow them to push and try to go for those, you know, those numbers that are going to get them to that next level of competition.
Absolutely.
And but in general, I'll take a make over a miss any day, right? So yeah. that's the whole thing. Like, if you're willing to take a miss over a make, then what is it for? Like, is it for your pride, just to say you hit a lift, you made it in training? That's great. But, you know, if it's actually to make a lift on the competition platform where it's going to go into an official record and it's going to count for more than just, you know, your own personal best, I'd rather take a make over a miss any day.
And that's just the thing is, you know, the most of us, you and I included, are, you know, we're training to improve the total. We're training because we like it.
Right.
You know, it's, if you're not on the verge of qualifying or meddling or doing any of those sort of things, it's more important to just lift really well. Because if you did 122 or 125, in the long run, that doesn't really matter as long as you, you know, continue to improve.
Right.
So taking the lift that, you know will give you an improvement on the total before taking the PR attempt, I think that works out pretty well. And it's something that I definitely like to see
Yeah, I agree with that. And then, so going back to all the external factors at the, you know, besides the gym, your sleep, your recovery, and we've talked about this before, all those things are contributing to your performance. And you know, if you don't take care of the things outside of the gym, then it's going to affect the things inside the gym. So like, you know, if you do have poor nutrition practices and then, you know, you're trying to perform a specific way, and you don't, or you don't even make weight, like that's a problem too. Like if you have such terrible eating habits that you can't make weight, maybe that's, you know, needs to be reevaluated and look, you know, you need to do some self-reflection about what your goals are. And so, and that's what it really comes down to, is what your goals are. And I know we've talked about that too. We could beat it to death, but you know, it really matters what you want out of it. A lot of people, they didn't go saying, oh, well, I want to place this in my session, or I want to win my session. They're just like, I want to go out and make lifts, have fun. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. In fact, I think that's amazing. That's a good attitude to have toward it.
Yeah, and I mean, we kind of got to see the, because Consuelo was in Sarah's session, we kind of got to see the way that Sarah was approaching the meet, and she was having fun the whole time.
Yeah,
she, you know, she went 6 for 6. She broke an American record, and was just having a solid time. You know, and I think that that's a really important, you know, if you want to look up to somebody, that is a perfect example, because she is consistent. She's not so serious that she's causing extra stress to herself. She's there to make lifts and is just seems like she's having such a great time doing it, you know? And it's always, it's great to see when people just have like that love for the sport, and aren't, you know, acting like it's the end of the world, because it's one competition. It's one day. It doesn't matter, you know, like it doesn't matter if you did 2 more kilos or tried to do 2 more kilos and missed, you know, it's whether you had a good meet or a bad meet, it's still just one day in a career of training. You know, you're going to be training for a long time.
Right.
And if you love it, make that your goal, is to just be consistently improving over the long run, and you're going to get there healthier and less damaged than if you're trying to get there in 6 months.
Right. Yeah, that's true. I liked watching, because we were in some of the sessions where, you know, some of the top lifters were back there, and just watching their different approaches was kind of interesting to me, because Sarah Robles was definitely one where she was like having fun. She was, you know, she wasn't stressing about anything. She just came to make some lifts, and she did. And she actually made some really big ones, you know, new American record. But, you know, I got to see some of the other lifters that ended up on the world team back there, and the way that they were interacting with their coaches and sometimes their teammates who were also competing in their sessions or even in lower sessions. Not all of them have the same approach. Like, some of them are more serious than others, but that's probably based on personality and things like that. And that's what we all bring to the table. Some of us do love to have fun. I know in Grayson's session, like, he was just like, oh, let's go. He was amped. He was ready to lift. And he was just wanted to have a good time. And that's, you know, the way he is. And then for me, I'm a little more subdued. You know, I'm just more calm. I try to stay focused. I still goof around a little bit. But for the most part, like, when I'm lifting, I'm focused on lifting, and that's it.
And that's what's so good about doing, you know, these, why I love having these regional meets, is it really gives our athletes a chance to figure out, it's like, okay, well, what attitude do I need to have in the back? Because I think, you know, we've both tried different approaches when we were lifting, and I've just found that, like, not feeling like everything is, you know, so serious and putting all that pressure on myself, I do a lot better just kind of staying relaxed and, you know, having conversations and just waiting for the next lift. And you just got to find what works for you, and having the opportunity to practice that in those sort of sessions is a really good indicator of, like, oh, okay, so I know the next time I do this, I didn't like sitting there with my headphones in because I got in my head. So I need to talk to somebody.
Yeah.
And, you know, be a little distracted.
Right.
You know, I know that I shouldn't watch the monitor to see what the guy before me did. Because if he misses, now I'm thinking I can miss that weight.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's, right. You know, figuring out the little things that every person needs to do a little bit differently. And it's definitely a really fun part of the sport because I love the mental side of the sport because yeah. It's so, so mental. And just, you know, having the confidence to go out and make a lift after the one before was shaky or, you know, you miss something that you know you can make and now you've got 2 minutes to go back out and prove it. You know, those little tests of character, those little tests of resilience,
right.
I think are where you get a lot of the growth in the sport because, you know, the routine and the training definitely breeds, you know, some toughness in you and some belief in your capabilities. But the competition, whether or not you're trying to win, it's just, can I put myself in a situation where it's not ideal, where I'm not lifting on my time, I'm lifting on the competition's time, and if I have to go, I have to go, and that's it. And, you know, we had, you know, some people, which is a really good example of not letting what happens in the warm-up dictate what happens on the platform, because I know that in Amanda's session, she was having some trouble with her warm-ups.
Yeah.
And just having to have that moment of, it doesn't matter that you just whisked a lighter weight in the back. You have to go snatch right now and going out and making it.
Right.
Like, that's where your excitement comes from. That's where that, you know, really intense buildup of personal achievement, just knowing that what happens in the back room doesn't indicate what's going to happen next.
Right.
And what happened at this meet doesn't indicate what's going to happen at the next meet. And really trying to live in the moment, right? So if you're, you know, dwelling on the lift that went forward and you had to walk out 5 minutes ago before you're going out on the platform, you're not in that moment. You're not on the platform. You're back in the warm-up room worried about your previous lift.
Right.
And trying to really be present on that platform and put everything else out of your head and just know that you know how to snatch and that you can move that weight and it doesn't matter what it is and it doesn't matter what happened 10 minutes ago. I think you just can't recreate that kind of experience in the gym. And that's why I think competition is so beneficial for getting people hungry to lift more weight and really dialing in their nutrition and training.
Yeah.
But it's just a really good personal growth experience to, you know, go through the struggle of, oh, I need to make weight or I need to lift at a time that I'm not comfortable waking up and training at. Getting through those difficult moments, I think, really helps you grow as a person within the sport, which is what, you know, our kind of whole thing is, you know, we're not just training to get strong or be kind of jacked or whatever.
Yeah.
We're trying to, you know, be more complete people and use this as a way to, you know, be present and be mindful and, you know, improve ourselves in other ways.
Right. Yeah. And that's like, for me, I think competition, it's not just an indicator of how much, you know, training and strength you've accumulated. It's a test of your mental toughness because you lift every day, you know, you make lifts, you train, you know, you lift heavy things, and that isn't the same as showing up on a platform with 6 attempts and making those attempts count. So like it's kind of like sharpening a sword, right? Training is sharpening the sword. Competition is actually using it. But sometimes if you're not prepared properly, it's going to break. The sword will break. And I think when people, they can't handle the competition aspect of it, like they've been sharpening their skill, their technique this whole time, and then it just falls apart on the competition platform. Like that's, for me, that's an indicator that they have a weakness in their mental toughness. and their resilience to be able to bounce back from something that didn't go their way, you know, quote unquote didn't go their way. And then sometimes you'll find that when people do that, they like to blame everybody else. Oh, I didn't get enough coaching, or oh, my nutrition was off, or you know, I had all this stuff going on. Well, I mean, you just didn't prioritize it. And what you were talking about earlier with you know, when all those external factors contribute to your performance, it's like, well, those are all the things that contributed to your performance because you let them. You know, you didn't stay on top of your nutrition, you barely made weight, or you know, you had all this time where you didn't come into the gym consistently and you didn't get, you know, any coaching. So like, if you're gonna say it didn't go the way you wanted it to, well, is it because you didn't prioritize it and you didn't have the things that you need to do covered, or is it because it's just you know, one of those days where it just didn't come together for you? And there's a difference, because
yeah, because you can do everything right and still have a terrible meet.
Yeah,
that absolutely happens.
Yeah, so but you have to, it's part of that self-reflection process where it's like, oh, I let this thing get to me and I couldn't get past it, so then it just, you know, ruined my lifting day. And that happens in training, but it also happens in competition. But the competition is where, like I said, you're putting the sword to use. And if it gets bent out of shape, it's not going to be very useful.
Yeah.
For the rest of the competition. So
we can plagiarize and alter a quote that the unexamined competition is not worth competing in.
Yeah.
So you know, do that after action report every time you know, do a meet. It's like, okay, what went in my favor? What went well? What didn't?
Right.
What do I need to communicate to my coaches about what I feel about that performance? What do I need to do better leading up to the meet? Like, I'll get off track in my nutrition or in my stretching or all the other little things that I have to do. And I know that I'm not doing those things.
Yeah.
And if you look at it and you're honest with yourself, you can be like, probably could have made that last lift if I had done X, Y, and Z. And then not just, you know, acknowledging it and moving it on, status quo, continuing to do the same things, but use those little things and be like, okay, well, maybe I'm not going to do a radical change, but maybe I'm just going to make sure I eat breakfast in this next cycle.
Right.
And see how that does. Because you don't have to do these changes as a monster wholesale revamp of your life. It's just make those little adjustments. Like, can I watch 30 minutes less of Brooklyn Nine-Nine at night and go to sleep a little bit earlier, you know? And those little things really add up, especially over the long run.
Yeah, and you shouldn't make those monster adjustments either, because it's hard to keep track of if it's making a difference or not. So it's better just to add one thing or take away something that's distracting or it's not, you know, contributing to what you're trying to accomplish. Yeah, so I just think that people really do need to examine where they sit, where they want to sit, and how they're going to get there. And it's important to take some responsibility for their own training and get the help they need. Ask clarifying questions or say, hey, is there something else I can do to improve? Or this is what I'm trying to accomplish. And that's why we asked our people to make goals for us. And, you know, if you don't have anything in mind, then what do you have to work toward? So
yeah,
that's it. That's all I have for as far as weightlifting goes. I know you wanted to talk about something else, or do you want to
I've got something, and I need to preface this because I feel like I'm like the only person that has this opinion, and I'm interested to see what you think. And it ties a little bit in to the intention behind your actions discussion we had on the last podcast.
Right.
But so what I want to talk about today is, it's really common within CrossFit culture, and then it permeates into weightlifting just a little bit here and there. But I'm trying to flush out my ideas on how I feel about hero workouts. So on one hand, I recognize that people want to, you know, try to pay some respects to somebody that was killed in, you know, the war on terror, and work through those things and kind of do something to make it feel like, you know, they're really, you know, not forgetting that that's going on. But, and I recognize that those workouts are built around things that those people themselves liked to do. So it really is something that they liked doing, and it's kind of, you know, immemorial of that. But I feel like people have a really good intent when they do a hero workout. They're saying, oh, you know, we're doing something to remember, you know, doing Murph on Memorial Day, that sort of thing. But I don't actually know that that's a good way to show support for those things. Because, so here's my problem with it, is I sort of feel like people end up doing those to just make themselves feel better about it. And while the intent is good, it's not accomplishing anything. It's not raising awareness about our need to end interventionist foreign policy.
Right.
It's not
yeah.
raising money for homeless veterans that are, you know, down on their luck. It's not, you know, contributing to a college fund set up in the name of that person so his kids can go to school. So while it feels like you're really making a gesture of like, oh, we're not forgetting this, the impact is really negligible. And I kind of feel like you doing thousands of push-ups over an hour, does that really do anything than just make you feel better about the fact that we've been at war for more than 10 years? Like, are we, in that culture, are we just forgetting how awful the whole policy of the last two decades almost has been? And are we losing sight of this person lost their life and we still haven't accomplished, you know, these other things? So is that really the best way to help veterans, to remember them? I just feel torn, because I feel like it's always looked at as this really good thing, and it just seems really hollow to me.
Yeah.
And I don't know if I'm crazy.
No, so, okay. For most of us are washed up CrossFitters, right? That's what weightlifters are. We're washed up CrossFitters at this point. But seriously, when people do the hero wads, I know there's the intention behind it is to honor the people that the workout is named after. And I can respect that, and I used to do them myself, but there's an aspect to it that's somewhat selfish, and that's keeping track of the time, or, you know, if it's as many rounds as possible, how many rounds you did. Like, there's that element of still keeping a measurement. So it's not really in respect and honor of that person. You're just doing that and then keeping track of your results for your own benefit. And that's my personal take on it. And it's kind of like when people say, oh, you have my thoughts and prayers, right? That doesn't really mean anything. It doesn't do anything. You're like, oh, well, I'm sending positive vibes your way. Like, yeah, okay, great. That didn't do anything. It didn't accomplish anything. So like when people say that, it's more like, oh, well, don't forget about me type of thing. Oh, hey, I did this Murph workout today in honor of, you know, fallen veterans, but they're posting it on social media. It's like, oh, well, don't forget about me on this day. And that's what it seems like to me, is just like, or whenever a tragedy strikes or the war on terrorism, when people they chime in almost in a way that's saying, oh, well, I'm still here, don't forget about me. Or, you know, it's like those posts like Mother's Day. Oh, happy Mother's Day to my mom. They don't tag their mom. Their mom doesn't even have Instagram. Like, who's that for? And that's the thing, like, with sometimes when I see posts, or even when I post things, it's like, who is this for? Like, if I'm going to say happy Father's Day to my dad, I'm going to go tell him happy Father's Day. I'm not going to post it on Instagram. Like, he doesn't even have Instagram. And nobody's going to show him. Like, I'm not going to show him, like, hey, Dad, I posted this for you on Instagram. I mean, it just seems kind of like narcissistic a little bit, but It's those same things with the hero wads, though. Like, oh, I did this hero wad, and then you post, like, oh, I got this time on it. Like, well, are you really doing it to honor that person, or is it really just for yourself?
Competition amongst your friends. Yeah. And that's kind of where, like, it's like, well, you know, I think that you should, you know, pay respects to people and, like, you know, the sacrifices that people have made, whether or not they were for anything that ends up being purposeful in the long run, need to be acknowledged. But it's the same way that I feel weird about Memorial Day, where I don't know if the best way to remember the 18-year-olds we sent off to invade Normandy, or, you know, your high school classmates that have died in Iraq, I don't know if the best way to remember them is to wear an American flag t-shirt and barbecue some hamburgers and get hammered.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, it just feels like, it just doesn't feel introspective, and it doesn't feel like, you know, we're looking at trying to make war less likely, or trying to reduce the casualty numbers, or trying to help people that are around, you know? And I think that it's that the intent is great. Like, we should be remembering people, but it's, you know, I think that you should be trying to find ways to do that helps another person,
right?
Or makes a change. And while, you know, doing that workout in the moment, you'll be like, oh, I went through this really hard thing, but it's nothing to what they did, and I'm doing that in their honor.
Yeah.
Doesn't change anything outside of yourself. It changes how you feel. You feel like you've, you know, done something and, you know, shown some respect. But trying to take that show of respect to something tangible, I think, you know, because if everybody that did a Memorial Day Murph donated to, like, a food drive for homeless veterans instead, wouldn't that be a better thing to do in his honor than 100 push-ups?
Yeah, I think so. To me, it would. And the thing is like, those types of holidays where everybody gets off, like, that's all it is. It's a day off for people. And, you know, like, Memorial Day, it's just a day where you can invite your friends over to a barbecue, get drunk, and end up with a sunburn at the end of the day, right? So it's not personal. So if you really wanted to honor somebody, and let's count that separately, like volunteering or whatever. Let's just say you wanted to honor somebody. What if you picked a person that's buried in a national cemetery? We have a national cemetery here in New Mexico in Santa Fe. What if you picked one person, one grave, and said, this person on that day fought and died on foreign soil so that I could continue to be calling myself an American with the, you know, the rights and liberties that I have to this day. Like, I was born in a free country because somebody else went and fought for it. This person specifically went and fought for it. That's more personal. I think that's more honorable than just saying, oh, well, happy Memorial Day on Instagram. You know, so, and then the other thing is, like, if you actually want to do something, like, go do something, right? An action is more than just, you know, a post on Instagram, you know. And it goes back to that thing of, like, oh, well, you know, happy Veterans Day or happy Memorial Day to everybody that's out there. Like, who's that for? Like, it's just another thing, like, oh, don't forget about me. I know it's Memorial Day, but don't forget about me. You know, if you actually went and volunteered at a homeless shelter or at a somewhere where veterans need, you know, clothes, or maybe one of them needs a haircut. Like, if you know how to cut hair, what if you volunteered an afternoon to go help cut veterans' hair so they can go, you know, get jobs or whatever? I mean, that's the kind of thing that actually makes a difference, not your Facebook post about, like, I support, you know, veterans, not that bumper sticker on your truck with the balls hanging, you know, off the back of your tailgate. That's not helping veterans either.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, one thing that I kind of have a little bit of an issue with, and I don't know how you feel about this having served as well, is that what I worry the hero workout culture or the military flyovers at NFL games and like the, you know, like near North Korean levels of like flags and forced patriotism stuff does is like, and it's the same reason I don't like to watch a lot of like war movies.
Right.
Is that I feel like it's, I worry about the over glorification of those things.
Right. Yeah.
Because I know when I was 18, I had all these ideas about glory and, you know, honor and doing some crazy stuff. And, you know, I just feel like, well, that's important because we need people to serve. We have a volunteer force. It's just, is saying, oh, he fought in this war and we're doing this workout. It just doesn't feel like it's, it feels like a recruiting strategy, right? Like it feels like this glorification of, oh, if you go and you do this and you fight for whatever our interests are actually, you're going to have this workout named after you and people will know your name and you're going to do this. And it's like, yeah, we should, you know the names of people that are doing this. But it just feels kind of like this, you know, recruitment strategy more than a somber remembrance. You know, it feels like a glorification of war rather than a somber, regretful remembrance of war. And that's what I think, because it's horrible that we've lost thousands of people in the hills of Afghanistan. Like, that's terrible.
Yeah.
And I feel like really trying to glorify things, I mean, it almost, like, I don't know if this is, I don't know how committed I am, but, like, it, like, feels like it cheapens their sacrifice to use it as a strategy to glorify these things and to draw more kids in. And, you know, like, it's just, it's feeding the same machine.
Wow. Yeah. That's an interesting way of looking at it.
And I don't know if it's, you know, like, I don't know if I'm not looking at all sides, but like, that's just kind of how it's felt to me. And when I had to run things like Memorial Day Murph, I always tried to attach, like, we did a fundraiser that sets up college funds for kids whose parents were killed in wars. And I think if you I think you just need to attach something tangible to it.
Right.
And something, you know, if you want to remember somberly, because all of those people were somebody's child. A lot of those people hadn't even turned 22 yet.
Right.
Like, you know, it's not, it's something we should regret having to do. Rather, we shouldn't be excited to go to war.
Right.
We should regret having to go to war. We should try to avoid that sort of thing. Yeah. Because those people's lives matter. And I just feel like having to do something tangible, or at least being somber in that reflection rather than oorah with it, is, it just feels more right to me.
Yeah.
I don't know.
No, I think I share the same view, and I'm not sure if it is because I'm a veteran as well, but there is an over glorification of combat and of, like, the warrior culture in our society. And I think a lot of CrossFit communities embrace that because a lot of military members are part of that. But I think they're, and this is evident in the confusion between what Memorial Day and Veterans Day are. Like, a lot of people don't know the difference. And Memorial Day is just that. It's a memorial. It's a remembrance. You know, it's like that phrase in Latin, memento mori, remember that you will die. Right, but it's not like a depressing, sad, you know, lay in my room in the dark thing. It's a remember that every day you live is important. And for, in the case of like Memorial Day and Memorial Day workouts, like remember that these people did something that was worthy of being mentioned. And a lot of people do it, but just these few select people have their names attached to a workout. And yeah, there should be something else attached to it, like what you set up to honor those people. And then for Veterans Day, that's the people that are alive, they're still here. They're still around, people that you can talk to, ask them about their experiences. And there's the difference is like you're celebrating the life of people that are still alive on Veterans Day, and Memorial Day is to remember those that gave their life or you know, were part of a war effort in some way. So I think that not glorifying the things that are probably exaggerated anyway in that's retelling of stories and things like that is probably something we should shy away from and just stick to more of like the somber, you know, this person did this, this is why it matters, and then this is what we're going to do to continue to propel that legacy in a direction that that person would have probably wanted anyway. It's like, don't do a workout just for me, like make it benefit somebody, like
help other people.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, I mean that's my take on it too.
Yeah, all right, well I think we're going to keep things sad and end on a quote. So this is one of my favorite quotes that kind of makes me think about this issue. It's from Cat's Cradle by Kurt Vonnegut. I do not say that children at war do not die like men. If they have to die, to their everlasting honor and our everlasting shame, they do die like men, thus making possible the manly jubilation of patriotic holidays. But they are murdered children all the same.
Yeah. All right, folks. Well, we hope the podcast finds you well. Enjoy every day that you've got, every moment that you've got, and we'll talk to you next time.
All right, guys, get ready for squats.